No doubt about it, we lead a pretty comfortable lifestyle in the U.S. compared to the rest of the world. That's the good news. Hi, I'm Rob West. The bad news is we're so complacent that we rarely question the price before purchasing something. We've forgotten how to haggle, a common practice in other countries. I'll tell you how to do it today. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Now, so much for blanket statements. Maybe you do occasionally try to talk down the price of something, and if so, you know that it sometimes works. But many of us are reluctant to even try, and that's possibly due to a lack of confidence. We don't really know how to do it, so we don't try, and then it just becomes a habit to pay whatever the seller is asking. And some folks might think that it's dishonest or unbiblical to talk someone down in price, but I think it's actually good stewardship, making the most of the resources God's entrusted to us. The Bible has many examples of God's people negotiating with others. The spies coming to terms with Rahab in Joshua 2 is just one of them. It reads, "So the men said to her, 'Our life for yours, if you do not tell this business of ours, and it shall come about when the Lord gives us the land that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you.'" Negotiating is not at all like trying to dodge a debt or evade paying taxes, which of course would be dishonest and unbiblical. As long as the seller has the freedom to say no, there's nothing wrong with trying to get a better deal. So where do you start? Well, the first thing is to determine where you can negotiate and where you can't. There's no sense wasting your time if you know that the offered price is absolutely firm. Here are some things you can often get a lower price on if you're willing to negotiate. Your cell phone plan, your cable package, that's more true now than ever with all of the available streaming services, your credit card interest rate, and your gym membership. With those, sometimes all you have to do is ask and you'll get a better deal. Some others that'll require more work might include your rent and car insurance. And for that, you might have to give up some things to get a better price. So a word of caution, be sure that you maintain adequate coverage. Now, for the nuts and bolts of how to negotiate, well, let's say you've decided to negotiate your rent. And with rent so high these days, this is definitely worth at least trying. So start by doing your homework. Use Zillow or Craigslist to find out what others are paying for comparable units in your area. Make a list of a few with lower rents that you can cite in your negotiation. Then be ready to offer something in return for a lower price. Maybe you can pay a few months in advance, or you'd be willing to sign a longer lease, or increase the termination notice from 30 to 60 or even 90 days. Those are all things landlords love. But you can also offer things that won't cost you anything. For example, if you don't have a car, offer your parking space. Or promise not to smoke in the unit. That could save the landlord money. Or not to keep a pet, even if they're allowed. The secret to successful negotiating is working toward both parties getting something out of it. You want to make it win-win. You can also negotiate for a higher salary. A lot of folks are shy about asking for a raise, but right now you've got tremendous leverage. Employers are still desperate to attract and retain good workers, so the market's in your favor. Start by making a list of problems that you've solved for the company. Maybe you've decreased the accounts receivable balance, or your ideas and suggestions eliminated certain expenses. Well, that's a great start. Then, make a separate list of the problems you will solve going forward. Finally, determine your asking salary. You can visit salary.com or payscale.com to get an idea of what others are paid for similar work in your area. Now, you're then ready to negotiate, so make an appointment with your boss to talk about your salary. During that discussion, show your lists of problems solved and problems you'll address. The worst that can happen is your boss says no. And if that happens, hang on to the lists you've made. If you decide to move on, well, they'll be a big help when you nail your next job interview. If you're buying something, usually a bigger ticket item like an appliance, well, simply ask. Is that the best you can do? In some cases, the salesperson will bend over backwards to give you a better price or throw in something to sweeten the deal. Bottom line is, asking for a better price never hurts and you just might get it. So where are you going to start today? Maybe give that cell phone company a call or the cable company. Those might get you warmed up for the other ask that'll take a little bit more work down the road. As a steward of God's money, we want to be wise money managers, and negotiation can be a key part of that. We're going to pause for a brief break, but we'll be back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Stick around. They say actions speak louder than words. Here at the American Family Association, we take that to heart. AFA Action is here to inform and help you get involved in cultural and moral issues. You can also sign up for our AFA Action Alert, which will inform you about these issues every week by email. To sign up and for more information, visit us at afaaction.net. Why are you still sitting there? If you want change, it starts with you.
This is Frank Affney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. It's your personal, daily intelligence briefing about the challenges we face, how they're likely to affect you, and what we can do about them. You can find Secure Freedom Radio here every weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in to learn from our extraordinary experts what you need to know and will want to share. Join us for Secure Freedom Radio tonight at 11 Eastern, right here on AFR.
Sound Mind Investing helps Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors who are just getting started, those making investment choices for a company retirement plan or college savings account, and people getting close to their retirement years. SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information is at soundmindinvesting.org. The website also features many articles about common money management and investing topics. soundmindinvesting.org.
Whether the Apostle Paul or King Manasseh, the Bible is chocked full of testimonies of God's irresistible grace of unlikely converts. Hear their stories, some known, some obscure, on a Haven Today series all week called Unlikely Conversions.
Haven Today, weekday mornings at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Listen online at afr.net.
Siri, open my food delivery app.
Before you order in again, are you sure that's in your budget?
What budget?
Exactly. You need the free MoneyWise app. With its electronic envelope budgeting system, you'll know exactly where every dollar is going, and you can finally stay on top of your money.
I guess that does sound like a pretty good idea. Siri, download the MoneyWise app.
Okay. Searching for MoneyWise in the App Store. Learn more at MoneyWise.org.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. So glad you're along with us today. Let me remind you, MoneyWise and MoneyWise Media is listener supported. That means we rely on your generous support to do what we do on the air each day. And if you'd consider a gift, we'd certainly be grateful. You can do so one time or become a MoneyWise patron. That is a monthly supporter of the ministry. If you just head to MoneyWise.org and click the donate button, you can give online, over the phone, or find our mailing address to send a gift in. Again, moneywise.org and click donate. We're going to head back to the phones. By the way, our team is away from the studio today, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance. We'll head to St. Louis, Missouri next. Stanley, thank you for your patience. Go right ahead, sir.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm 22 years old. I'm getting married soon. And I was thinking about getting a house because I don't want to pay rent. But the economy is kind of doing bad, and all the house prices are kind of going crazy right now. So I was wondering if it's a good idea to wait and, like, I don't know, rent or something, or just like rent an apartment.
Sure.
Or like, what's the best option to do? kind of.
Yeah, Stanley, I appreciate that question because we certainly want you and your fiance to get started off right financially when you all get married. And I'm delighted that you're thinking about this now. I can also appreciate your desire to own a home as opposed to renting. So you're sending money and making that payment and building some equity and something that you own and can ultimately own, you know, Lord willing, free and clear. And I realize this will be a starter home and probably one of many that you'll own, but the timing is really key. And yes, it's a challenging market right now. And yes, mortgage rates are headed higher. But the last thing I'd want you to do, Stanley, especially as a brand new married couple, would be to get overextended and try to get into the housing market before you're ready and find yourselves really squeezed financially. So because of that, I would really rent and delay this purchase until you can put at least 20% down. So if you're going to buy a $100,000 home, you'd have $20,000 ready to put down over and above your emergency fund of hopefully 3 to 6 months expenses. Or if you're buying a $200,000 home, you'd have, you'd have $40,000 to put down. And that's really going to ensure that even if the price of the home were to dip a little bit, that you're never upside down. I'd also want to make sure that that mortgage payment is not more than 25% of your take-home pay. So you've got plenty left to deal with all your other expenses. So you all can, you know, obviously cover your bills, but also handle the discretionary expenses and, you know, fund things like putting something away and starting a retirement account or paying off your student loans if you've got them, those types of things. So give me a sense of where you're at just in terms of any savings that you've put aside at this point.
So I have like a couple of different things. So in my investing account, right now it's really low. It's at around $8,000, but if it was like the break even point, then it would be $18,000, but I'd have to wait for the economy to like come back up because it's heavily, you know, the market's sure. Kind of just terrible right now.
Yeah.
And then, in savings I have between, because of like, help from my family and stuff, I have around like $36,000.
Okay. All right. And what would your budget be, do you think, when you all are married per month? How much would you be spending in expenses?
I don't know, like probably $1,500 to like $2,000.
All right. And does that include your rent or mortgage payment?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's going to be challenging just to make sure that you're putting food on the table and putting gas in the car and, covering that rent or mortgage payment. And if it's a mortgage payment, then the utilities on top of that. So I think the key for you is really to, you know, go back to that spending plan and just look at what is it going to take for us to pay all of our bills and live within the income that you've got. Do I see here in the notes that you make about $40,000? Is that right?
Yeah, around there.
Okay, and will she be working?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to want to look at what your combined income will be, and then after taxes and any other deductions that are coming out of that, like health insurance, that type of thing, any debt payments, hopefully you don't have any debt, but you got to include that in, and after any giving, what do you have left? And then, out of that, you've got to work on a budget that covers the rent or the mortgage plus, you know, all the other expenses. And that's really critical. And so if you're spending, let's say, $2,000 a month, I'd love for you to have, at least $6,000, between $6,000 and $12,000 in emergency savings. Let's say it's $12,000. That would mean that you'd have about $24,000 left for the down payment on the house. And, you know, that would be a home of about $100,000. So I think, you know, you could begin looking for a home, but based on where you all want to live and what you need for your starter home, that may or may not be possible, you know, there in Missouri. But at least that gives you a starting point to say, okay, if we want to spend $100,000, we need $20,000. If we want to spend $200,000, we need $40,000. And if you're not quite there yet, I'd probably delay that purchase until you're ready to make that down payment of 20%. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and we can delay just because, getting an apartment or something like that.
Yeah.
Because our parents would help with, like, rent.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, and I think the key would be for you all to really develop a plan that says, okay, here's what our budget looks like. Here's what we're saving for. Here's our goal for not only our emergency savings, which you've got a great start with this $36,000, but here's our goal for the down payment on the house. And then begin praying that as you get that put away, that God will provide just the right house for you guys. But there's something to be said about waiting and working hard and then ultimately, you know, God providing and you all knowing that we didn't get overextended and, you know, we waited until we were ready to buy this house so we don't put ourselves in really a financial strain. Hey, I'd also just really encourage you as a part of your premarital counseling to really talk about finances. What are you all thinking about lifestyle and how much you want to be giving and you know, who's going to be the bookkeeper and just all of those things so you guys get ready for that. Lastly, you stay on the line because I want to send you a book called Money and Marriage, God's Way that I want you guys to read together. And Stanley, I appreciate your call today, sir. God bless you. To Ohio, Mary, thank you for calling. How can I help?
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I opened a high-yield savings account last year with my late husband's life insurance money, who died last April. Last November, that same year, I prayerfully moved all but my emergency fund to an investment account and a Roth IRA.
Okay.
I'm now questioning that I did the right thing with how much, you know, I've lost with the current market and stuff. And I'm just wondering if I did the right thing and shouldn't have left it in the high yield savings.
Yeah. Well, I can understand. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, Mary, and I know that that can be frustrating. How much did you get from the life insurance that you put to work?
Yeah. So, I put 423 into an investment, 423,000, and then, started, you know, a 401k, Roth IRA for 7,000.
Gotcha.
And then I added 7,000 to it this year.
Okay. And is this money you need to live off of, or is this money that can just stay invested for a long time?
That's a good question. I think it can stay invested. I'm also having half of my pay go to my work 401k because I've never contributed to it in all these years.
Okay.
So I'm trying to make up for lost time.
Yeah, I get it. Well, here, let me give you a quick answer and then we'll talk a bit more off the air. I'd leave it invested, but I'd make sure it's properly diversified and it's invested according to your age and risk tolerance, and you'd want to do that with an advisor. You stay on the line and we'll be right back.
When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at AFN.net and sign up for our daily news brief at AFN.net.
Siri, I need some advice.
What's up?
I have questions about planning for retirement, long-term care insurance. I don't know where to start.
It sounds like you need the MoneyWise app. It's a free app that will help you find those answers and more.
Really?
Sure thing. You can ask your questions within the app and access helpful articles and MoneyWise podcasts.
Sounds great. Siri, download the MoneyWise app.
Okay, searching for MoneyWise on the App Store. Learn more at app.moneywise.org.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way. The Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I couldn't have had the procedure I needed without CHM's help sharing the bills. That letter from a member displays Christian Healthcare Ministry's purpose to glorify God and serve His people. CHM is the original non-insurance voluntary health cost-sharing ministry, enabling its members to share the cost of each other's medical bills. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
Hannah's Heart, a half-hour program specifically designed to encourage Christian couples walking through infertility and miscarriage.
This is not a show that's going to promise you a certain outcome, but this is a show that says however God answers your cry, we know that He's enough.
Hannah's Heart with Ann Cockrell and Kendra White each Saturday afternoon at 5 Central on American Family Radio. You can find the podcast at AFR.net.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio as we apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices, recognizing money issues, well, they're heart issues. Today's program is recorded, so phone lines aren't open, but we have some great questions lined up for you. All right, to Evansville, Indiana. Hey, Steve, thanks for your patience, sir. How can I help you?
Thanks for taking my call, Rob. Sure. I have a credit card that I would like to cancel. It has been compromised, and we've been through quite a bit with the bank that handles the card, and I would just rather cancel it and be done with it. But I'm concerned about what it would do to my credit score, and if there is a way that I can actually find out how to check that.
Let me ask it. I'll answer your question, Steve, because you will probably see generally a lower score, but it'll be temporary. But does that matter in the sense that are you going to be out seeking new credit in the near future?
No, not really.
Okay. Yeah, so I think from that standpoint, I wouldn't worry about it because your lower score will be temporary. Here's why that happens. It affects three of the five factors that measure your credit worthiness. The first is, potentially three of five, the first is credit utilization, which is 30% of your score. By closing this card, if you're carrying balances, whether that's a balance you're carrying month after month and just paying down a little bit at a time, or you're charging up a balance that's being reported to the bureau and then paying it off completely, that balance is now a higher percentage of the total available across all your cards because that particular card you close, the limit of that one is now off the table. So if that had a $10,000 limit, now your total available credit is $10,000 lower. And so any balances you're carrying are a higher percentage. And if they're now 30% or more of the total limit, well, that is going to hurt your score. It also affects the average age of your account because if this was an older account, that perhaps is now out of the equation. And then the third thing is the types of credit you have. The more credit you have that's being handled responsibly shows, that you're a lower risk. All of those factors, though, when you close an account, will rebuild themselves over time, and you're probably looking at somewhere between 30 and 50 points in a reduction. So I wouldn't be terribly concerned about it. I think what's more important is if this is an account that's been compromised, if you're not using it, it could be compromised again. I'd get it closed if it were me, and it's just one less account you have to think about.
Okay, sounds good. I really do appreciate the information, and God bless you for the work you're doing.
All right, Steve. Thank you for calling, sir, and God bless you as well. To Ohio, Craig, thanks for calling, sir. How can I help?
Yes, I was calling in regards to the I-bonds. I was wondering how I would go about investing into that.
Yeah, I like I-bonds a lot. I standing for inflation bonds issued by the U.S. government, the U.S. Treasury, in fact, backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. Interest rate adjusts every 6 months, and the portion of it that's pegged to CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is what's driving these elevated rates right now, over 9%, and then it'll adjust again in November. But given the fact that we're counting on elevated inflation for some time, I think these are going to be a great investment. You've got to hold it for a year, and if you take it out less than 5 years, you'll just give up the last 3 months' interest when you redeem it. You would buy them, to your question, Craig, at treasurydirect.gov, treasurydirect.gov. treasurys.gov. That's the Treasury's website where you can buy these. You can do it all online with an electronic transfer, and it'll be an electronic bond. And then you hang on to it, collect that great interest rate of over 9% right now. And I think it'll be a great thing for you for up to $10,000.
Okay. Now, I really haven't gotten in online and all that. Is there, another way of doing that? Or?
Yeah, there really isn't. I mean, the only other way to do paper bonds, paper I bonds, would be through your tax refund. Are you expecting a tax refund?
I was expecting one from last year, which I still haven't received.
Okay, yeah, it'd be a little late for that one because you'd have to refile. Unfortunately, you're going to have to do it through the website. So perhaps there's a family member or friend that could help you with that. It should be fairly simple and a secure process for you to go about. Because if you go directly to the website, you don't have to worry about, you know, any kind of phishing schemes or anything like that. You just want to type directly into a modern browser, treasurydirect.gov, and then find the process of getting those funds transferred. But it will need to be done online.
Online. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, my daughter is well with all that computer.
There you go. Yeah, your daughter or probably any 10-year-old.
These
younger kids seem pretty adept at all this stuff. I was joking with that, by the way. But yeah, I think that could be a great option for you, Craig, and I think you'll be glad you did it. So listen, thanks for your call and for listening, sir. God bless you. We appreciate it. Hey, before we take a break, a quick email that came in. Gloria wrote to us and said, I asked all three agencies to freeze my credit. She's talking about the credit bureaus, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. Now I don't know, Gloria says, if that was a good idea. What do you think? Yeah, I like freezing your credit, especially if you've had some accounts compromised. Here's what that's going to do. No one is going to be able to access your credit for the purpose of opening a new credit line or taking out a loan in your name without a PIN number that you've established, Gloria, at these three bureaus, which means if somebody's trying to compromise or assume your identity and open accounts fraudulently in your name, they'll be stopped in their tracks. And so that's a good thing. It's going to create a little more hassle if you try to go get your own loan because you've got to unlock or unfreeze these bureau reports. But apart from that, I think this is a great thing and something that most of us should be thinking about, especially if you've been notified that your information has been compromised. It's very easy to do, and it doesn't cost anything as of new legislation a couple of years ago. So just go to Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, and they'll all give you very specific instructions on how to freeze your credit. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back right after this. Stay with us.
You probably have a strategy for your finances, your career, even your retirement. But do you have a strategy for your giving? At the National Christian Foundation, we can help you create a giving strategy to inspire your family, maximize your resources, and leave a lasting legacy of faith. To learn how, visit moneywise.org/NCF.
This is the time where we all better be on our knees in front of our windows, where we better have the boldness to stand on the truth of God's word, where our allegiance better be to Him. Listen, He alone has an enduring kingdom. He alone makes promises and keeps them. God alone, nobody else.
Airing the Addisons, weekday afternoons at 2 Central on American Family Radio.
Sound Mind Investing offers investing guidance grounded in the stewardship principles found in Scripture. Since 1990, SMI has helped tens of thousands of Christians acquire knowledge and confidence related to investing and overall money management. Regardless of your investing experience or how much you have to invest, you can learn to be a wise and faithful steward in the area of investing. More information about SMI and its approach to financial wisdom for living well is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
God's Word is packed with life-changing wisdom about your finances. And MoneyWise is here to help you and millions of others learn to be wise stewards. As a nonprofit organization, we rely on help from MoneyWise patrons, supporters of this mission, to help us continue and expand our outreach. Has God provided financial answers for you through this ministry? If so, please consider becoming a monthly MoneyWise patron. Visit MoneyWise.org and click Give on the homepage.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
AFA upholds the truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are worthy of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. This is where we apply God's truth to your financial decisions. Here's what we recognize on this program. God owns it all, and money is a tool to accomplish God's purposes, because you're a steward, and so am I. We're money managers for the King of Kings. Here's the other reality, is that money issues are heart issues. You know, my experience is that our financial journey is one of the key ways God shapes our spiritual journey. And really, money issues, the way we handle money, it's a training ground of the heart. It's one of the most tangible, visible expressions of what we value and where we've placed our trust. The question is there a misalignment between what's really important to us and what money says is important to us? And if it is, perhaps we need to change the way we're allocating God's resources. Well, we can all get better at that, and so let's do that together. Our phone lines are not open at the moment because we're away from the studio, but we have some great questions that we lined up in advance. So we're going to go right back to the phones. Michael, thank you for your patience. Sir, how can I help you?
Sir, first of all, you are amazing, and the ministry that you're doing through the airways is amazing. So kudos to you. Thank you so
much
for
this. Well, that's incredibly kind. Thank you for those remarks.
So here's my question. I'm 54, and I want to be better prepared for retirement. I'm hearing some rumblings that, you know, the Social Security system is you know, being flooded with just, you know, the number of seniors who are living longer, and it's making it more challenging to support all of these individuals. And there may be a change where they move early retirement from 62 to 67. So how do I better prepare for, you know, when I reach 67? I owe about $120,000 on my mortgage. The value of the property is somewhere around $425. I feel like I can try to get it paid down or paid off in 7 years or 7 to 10 years, I guess, because I only took out a 15-year mortgage. And I'm struggling as to what's the best course of action for me. And I also have kids who are entering into college, so I want to be available to help support that, and really need to understand if I have to go with a student loan option, what's the best loan option for me as an adult who's getting closer to retirement.
Yeah, very good. Well, a couple of thoughts on this. I mean, number one, I think in terms of Social Security, you know, we all know that the latest estimates are, I think it's 2035, that the Social Security Trust Fund will be out of money. Does that mean there won't be any benefits at that point? No. If we were to stay on the current schedule, they'd be able to fund just by the current flow of money into the system through Social Security taxes, they'd be able to fund, I think it's about 70% of the current benefits. We'll see some changes. Right now, it's still far enough off that they're just kicking that can down the road with regularity. There are some proposals out there about moving full retirement age, you know, higher We've been talking about that for a long time. You know, there's some pretty controversial proposals out there right now as well, but it doesn't appear like Congress is really ready to do anything around any of these decisions right now. I think the bottom line is, you know, recognize even in its current form, Social Security was only intended to cover at the most 40% of your pre-retirement income. So that's why you need to be saving with diligence. And we'd say, you know, all things being equal, try to put 10 to 15% of your compensation away for retirement so that you have assets to supplement Social Security, regardless of what full retirement age is when you get to that point. Limit your lifestyle. Living within your means is obviously your most powerful tool to build wealth, because your income is what can help you build wealth so long as you're not using it all up on your lifestyle. So having that margin to save for the future and to be able to use for things like college education is obviously really key. So doing that, living within your means, living modestly and saving regularly and doing that for a long, long time is really the very best way to go about this. In terms of your mortgage, I think you're on a great path. You know, if you can find yourself in a position where you're completely debt-free to be able to, reduce your expenses in retirement because you're taking what is your biggest expense off the table at that point, that's a great plan. I think for most folks, if they can just try to be, completely out of debt, including their house by the time they reach retirement, you're going to put yourself in a really strong position. So I think you just need to keep doing what you're doing, Michael. Save as much as you can. Don't hesitate to get those kids involved in paying for college. Don't just automatically assume, you've got to pay for 100% of it. I just got word a few minutes ago that a good family friend, their daughter just got a $5,000 scholarship from a local utility here because she found it and applied for it and went in to did an interview last night and today is getting a $5,000 cash scholarship. But so between scholarships and grants and working in the summer and maybe an on-campus job of some kind, don't just assume that there's not money to offset that. And if you have to go get a student loan and you're willing to do that, I would say prioritize your retirement first. And if you need to borrow, then, be willing to do that. But make sure that there's a plan to pay it back. So I wouldn't borrow any more than based on the job that you believe your child is going to seek post-college, that the income would be there to support paying this back within 10 years. And I would say for any portion that you're going to obligate yourself to, make sure you can pay it back in a reasonable time. And it doesn't put your own ability to save for the future in jeopardy. But Michael, clearly you want to honor the Lord with what he's entrusted to you. And so that's coming through loud and clear, but I think you're making a lot of great decisions. We appreciate your call today. To Jackie in Chicago, WMBI. Jackie, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So good to talk to you guys again.
Thank you.
I'm calling in regards to, I'm working on a budget plan at this time. And one of the things I was looking at is that I have whole life and I have term life insurance. Yes. And they're kind of running around the same amount that I'm paying every month. But what I want to look into is that a good idea to have both, or is one better than the other?
I'm just trying to look into that. Sure. So I'm a fan of term life insurance. So I wouldn't cancel any of them until you have what you need fully in place before you cancel it. So let's say, I'm just going to make up numbers. Let's say they're each $200,000 policies. So you've got a total of $400,000 on your life and you decide to go with just term insurance. I'd make sure you have that new policy of an additional $200,000 to replace the whole life, or one new policy of $400,000 in place before you cancel anything, because in the event you die suddenly and you don't have that insurance, now somebody's got a hardship that they're facing. But in terms of which type, I would rather see you go term, get the least expensive insurance possible, which is term insurance, because you're just paying for the death benefit, and do your savings outside of an insurance policy through a retirement plan at work or a Roth IRA or something like that. So let's figure out how much you need, probably at least 10 to 12 times your income, plus maybe paying off a mortgage or a college education. Let's get that in force with term insurance for as long a term as you can, 20 or 30 years. Make sure it fits in the budget, and then pull the money out of the whole life policy, redeploy that, and then make sure you're saving separately. And I think that'll get you going in the right direction. Thanks for your call today, Jackie. Claudia in Cleveland, I've got just a minute left. Go right ahead.
Yes, I would like to know your opinion on U.S. Series I savings bonds.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, it has a fixed rate, but then it has an inflation adjuster.
Yes.
And, you know, according to what I've read right now, the 6-month rate is 3.56. And it adjusts every 6 months. Next 6 months, it would be like 4.81%.
Yeah, we love I-bonds, Claudia. You got to hold them for a year. Right now, you're going to get a little less than 10% on I-bonds. As long as you're willing to hold them for a year backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S., it's not a bad deal. Once again, this is a recorded program, so phone lines are not open today. We'll be right back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio.
God can use persecution to strengthen the church and individuals within it.
Persecution is granted to us. Don't miss this. What an honor to be chosen to follow in the footsteps of Christ, to die like the thief beside him, so that men enslaved to sin can see the gospel written in our flesh and believe.
Gain more perspective on persecution with Jordan Chambly's article, The Victorious Persecuted Church, in the Fall 21 issue of Engage Magazine, or visit EngageMagazine.net.
Anger can be a good thing if you know how to handle it. Next time on Focus on the Family, Deborah Pegay describes different triggers for anger and why we need to rely on the Holy Spirit's power rather than trying to manage angry emotions on our own. It's a practical guide to being angry without sinning. Next time on Focus on the Family.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
What's most important to you when it comes to choosing your financial advisor? Someone who's aligned with your biblical values? How about someone who will take the time to explain your options in plain English? Certified Kingdom Advisors are professionals who meet high standards in competence and integrity and have been trained to offer biblical financial advice. To find a Certified Kingdom Advisor in your area, visit MoneyWise.org and click the link that says Find a CKA. That's MoneyWise.org.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Phone lines aren't open today since this is a recorded program, but we have some great questions we think you will find helpful. Let's head right back to the phones. Landa in Oklahoma. Go right ahead. You're on MoneyWise Live.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a 457 plan and a 401 plan, and it's all combined in one pot. And they're telling me because now I'm 72, I will have to take a draw. What can I do about that? I don't want to draw, but I guess I have to.
Yes, that's right. So if you reached age 70 and a half after December 31st, 2019, then you start taking required minimum distributions at age 72. So your first required minimum would be no later than April 1st of the year following the year in which you turned age 72. So would that be next year for you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so then you would take the next RMD no later than December 31st of the year following. So you can wait until next year and then make two RMDs if you want, or go ahead and take one this year. But yeah, based on that IRS table, Landa, you will have to pull it out. Now, one way essentially to kind of get around that, if you will, is through something called a qualified charitable distribution. So if you're doing some giving right now, let's say to your church or other ministries out of cash, just out of your monthly budget, if you wanted to not do that and make the distribution from your 457 or 401k, you know, if you roll that to an IRA, then it could go straight to the ministry or charity, satisfy the required minimum, and essentially accomplish the giving that you were wanting to do anyway out of cash, and then you just hold on to that money. That would be one approach that would allow you to satisfy the required minimum and get more money to the charity or ministry because you're not having to add that to your AGI, your adjusted gross income for the year. I realize that may be a little complicated. Does that make sense to you?
It does. Is there a certain amount I have to draw?
There is. So there's an IRS table, and if you use a CPA, they could tell you. But essentially, if you go to the IRS's website, irs.gov, and search for a required minimum distribution, you can see, based on your age and based on the balance in your account, the schedule that's based on your life expectancy that would tell you exactly what you need to pull out of the account.
Okay, so that's great information.
You're welcome. And what I would do is, Landa, especially this first year, if you're used to filing your taxes yourself, I would get a CPA to do it for you for this first year. This is not something you want to get wrong, and you know, because if you don't take out enough, there could be interest and penalties. So I would make sure that you get some counsel to help you look at the accounts that you have and think about the most effective way to do it, whether that's through a qualified charitable distribution or just a straight distribution, to make sure that you take enough out, but also for the timing of when it needs to happen and the calculation of the amount based on the balance in the accounts. So hopefully that's helpful to you. We appreciate you checking in with us today. God bless you. Alice is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Alice, you go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. My call is about trying to build some credit. I don't have bad credit, but yeah, I don't have any credit, and I understand that that is important in terms of affecting your rates for, like, car insurance and things like that. That's why I'm trying to build it, not so much to borrow money,
sure,
because I've been an advocate of not doing that. But
yeah,
I just want to build it, and I don't want to get taken on some credit card scams. So what do you advise?
Sure. Yeah, one way you could go about that, Alice, is if you don't have credit right now, just from a lack of credit, you could go get what's called a secured credit card. So I'd probably go down to your bank and just say, listen, I want to open a secured credit card. This is essentially where you'd put a certain amount on deposit, let's say $200 or $300. They would issue you a credit card against it with a limit that matched what you put on deposit. The reason they call it secured is now it's secured by the balance that you've deposited into the account. So if for some reason you didn't pay, they just take the money. But assuming you pay it back every month, that would just sit there until you close the account. That takes all the risk from the bank, so they don't have to worry about whether you have good credit or bad credit. Now, what does that do for you? Well, what that does is you could take a budgeted recurring charge. Let's say you have a charge that you plan for in your budget every month. You know, it might be a streaming service or, you know, magazine subscription, something like that, that you've already planned for. Have that hit that credit card every month. Pay it off in full. We don't want you to accrue any debt or interest. Pay it off in full. But here's what's going to happen. Every time that charge occurs and every time you pay it off, you're now going to be reported to the Bureau as an on-time payer with that revolving account. And that's going to allow you to establish some positive credit history that over time will increase that score. Does that make sense?
It does, but my bank doesn't offer a secured credit card.
Okay. So there's a lot of them out there, and I would give you two different websites to look at that would help you find the best secured card for you. One is called Nerd Wallet, kind of a silly name, but nerdwallet.com, and you could just search for secured credit cards. The other is bankrate.com. Either of those would allow you to see who has the best secured credit cards. You want to make sure you have one with no fees, and you really don't care about the interest rate because you're going to pay it off in full every month. But that would give you a couple of options to consider, and then you could go get that account open and start building some credit history, okay?
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right, Alice. Thanks for calling. God bless you. Tampa, Florida, Victoria, go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Rob. Well, my question is, I am going to be 63 years old in September, and I am planning to retire 66 and 10 months or even work until I'm 67 years old. And so I have already set aside a good amount for my retirement. But right now I am just concerned about, because of the very unstable market, what else can I do to protect what I have already set aside?
What have you put aside? What do you have in that retirement account, if you don't mind me asking?
Yes, I actually have close to 800.
All right. Yeah. So I think the next step for you is to get some wise counsel, Victoria, because obviously you've been diligent in saving. You've built up quite a nest egg here, and I can understand it, especially as you transition to this next season of life. And by the way, congratulations on your upcoming retirement. Now is a time where you want to protect what you have, but you also want to allow it to work for you, especially in light of what we started by talking about today. You know, with the inflation, if you just take this money and put it in, you know, CDs or, you know, high yield savings account, even though those rates are climbing right now, they're pretty low. And so you're going to be losing purchasing power every month as the prices of goods and services rise. That doesn't mean you want to take unnecessary risk. So the idea here is that you want to find an appropriate level of risk that matches your risk tolerance, your needs, and the assets that you've built. And so what that probably looks like is a combination of some bank type products, you know, CDs or high yield savings, and especially as the interest rates rise, a portion in bonds, which have been selling off as of late as interest rates rise, but those will stabilize and recover, and then you'll get the, you know, coupon or the interest rate associated with them. And then probably a smaller portion allocated to stocks, maybe 20 or 30%. As an example, and that would be what provides the growth element to the overall portfolio. So you'd still stay on the fairly conservative end of the risk spectrum, but you have the potential to have a better return than if you were to just take it all and, you know, put it in bank type products like CDs and savings accounts. That typically is, you know, the best approach for you to generate, let's say, about a 4% return a year. And on 800,000, you know, we'd be talking about 32,000 a year. You know, I don't know whether are you planning on pulling anything out to supplement your income, or is this just going to be free to grow?
Well, right now it's just free to grow. I'm still working full time.
Okay.
And so really I have no need to pull anything out of it.
Okay.
And what I did last year was I was able to consolidate all of my retirement accounts into just one company to manage it.
Yeah. Okay. So you have an investment advisor who's making the decisions for you?
Yes. Yes. And so we pretty much sat down with him, and he sat down and proposed that, you know, to protect your money, this certain amount will be protected, and this amount we will manage it in a moderate risk. But if you want it to be in a very low risk, we can do that as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we opted for moderate risk, and we also have a annuity. Part of that was put in annuity.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And what was the annuity offering? Was it a fixed rate or a variable rate with investments inside it?
It was a variable rate.
Okay. All right. And have you already done that? Have you already purchased that annuity with that portion?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And how did you feel about that plan that he proposed?
Well, because at the beginning, it really looked very solid, and it was a very good proposal. And so it's just that, you know, this year, as I see how the market fluctuates, so I was thinking of going to the low risk or very conservative account instead of the moderate.
Well, and you certainly could do that. I think, you know, I would perhaps take another look at that. The key is that you have got a long time here. So even though you're 67, if the Lord tarries and you're in good health, this money needs to last several decades. So I'd take a longer term view of this. even though it still makes sense to revisit this from time to time. We're out of time today. You hold on the line and we'll talk off the air. MoneyWise on American Family Radio is a partnership between American Family Radio and MoneyWise Media. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks for being along with us, folks. Come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.